What do you call this?
This is The Vibe.
You've got The Vibe.
My favorite podcast.
It's the WCLT Vibe Podcast.
I'm Kelsey, and I have the pleasure today of speaking with Ben Shirley, composer and member of the board for the Newark Granville Symphony Orchestra. We're getting ready to put a cap on their season this year with their season finale coming up Saturday, May 9th at the Midland Theater in downtown Newark. Welcome, Ben. Tell us a little bit more about this great event coming up Saturday.
This Saturday at 7:30 at the Midland Theater, we have our season finale of the Newark Granville Symphony Orchestra. On the concert is Gershwin's Piano Concerto in F major. So if you like Rhapsody in Blue, this is going to be really special as well. This will be our last concert at the Midland Theater before our move to our new venue, Ohio State, Newark. Saturday evening is going to be special. We have piano soloist Caroline Hong doing Piano Concerto in F major by George Gershwin. Selfishly, I have a world premiere entitled Un Bese for soprano and orchestra with Shauna Corder singing. And rounding out the evening, we have Symphony No. 8 in G major, Opus 88 by Antonin Dvorak.
And how does this all tie into America 250?
Well, Gershwin, for one. So Gershwin's super American composer, and I'm an American composer. I'm an American. My dad was in the service. And his father was in the service, so American as you possibly can get. And Dvorak, he definitely had a lot of influence by the African-American culture. So I could say that he's as American music-wise as you can get.
What would you say people can expect of this weekend's performance?
I think it's going to be a celebration of our time at the Midland, for sure. And it's going to be a celebration of Caroline coming out and just fly through the keys. She's a great soloist, and we're all lucky to have her here. And for sure, the piano concerto is going to be a treat to listen to and watch.
So for those who may be interested in attending this event, where can they get tickets? Tell us more about the cost for those.
Tickets, you can go to ngsymphony.org and go through our website, and you'll see the button for tickets. Click on that, and tickets galore.
Now, I know this is the season finale. What's next for your upcoming season?
Partnering with OSU Newark is, I'm really excited about it. They're happy to have us there. We're happy to be there. We will be doing, instead of the one concert, we will be doing an afternoon and an evening concert there as well.
Fantastic. Now, how long have you been with the Newark Granville Symphony Orchestra for?
I was asked on the board in 2021. And I met Sue Larson through a YouTube ad a YouTube video of the symphony during COVID when I first moved here. October 1st will be 6 years for me. And I punched up YouTube, and there I found them. And my wife told me, why don't you make a comment saying, hey, this is great. And I didn't know what that was going to do. I did that. And I got to meet Sue Larson, the executive director, artistic director. And with that comment, gave me everything here in Newark.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, where are you originally from?
Los Angeles.
Okay. And how did you get here?
My wife is from here. She went to Newark High, and my father-in-law was sick at the time, and she said she had to come back and take care of my father-in-law, her father, and I came up and drove her here. And when I got here, it was everything that I needed in life, but I didn't know. And I was born in Berlin, Germany, and this reminds me of the place where I was born, Stieglitz, a little suburb of Berlin, and it hit home. Went back, and I was living in Hollywood, and at the COVID time, it was absolute madness and not in a good way. Came back once more to visit, and that's it for me. Packed up the U-Haul and left on a Friday night, got here Sunday morning, drove straight through, couldn't get here fast enough. I love the place.
So I know you said you're from L.A., and I know you've got a heck of a backstory. I'd love to know, like, where you started and how you got to be where you are now in music.
I'm going to have to give you the cliff notes because it's wild.
Yes.
Started playing music in high school, bass player, did Holiday Inns around the Texas, Northwest, and New Mexico. That ran out, got into different bands, toured the U.S. and Canada. And when that ran its course, went to L.A., Los Angeles to seek my fame and fortune. And I use that sarcastically in music. Got signed to Epic Records, did a couple of records, had a couple of singles on the charts. And rock and all that good stuff. I like to drink and I like to do drugs at the time, and I drank and did drugs. It worked for a long time, got in a different band, did a lot of cool stuff with producers, drinks, more drugs, drinks, psych wards, jail, psych wards, homelessness in Skid Row, Los Angeles. Ended up going back to school from a homeless shelter, the Midnight Mission, found that I did very well, all due to a 12-step recovery program. I'm a big 12-step recovery program guy, and I found I did well in school and got a partial scholarship to San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Fell in love with classical music, and it just went running at it full blast. And they called me a composer. Didn't know what that was, really. I liked to write songs when I was doing the rock stuff. And I kept writing, kept learning, kept working hard and trying to do the right thing instead of what I found, fell in the trap of all the phony baloney rock stuff. How do you want me to look like? What do you want me to say? And how should I act? And all that stuff. And I felt really not good about myself doing that. But today's a different story, and I'm in love with the music again. And I'm just grateful for that whole ride. It was pretty crazy.
How did you go from being like a rocker to getting into like symphony orchestra?
Just going to school and not getting it. And there's a few classical composition rules, theory rules that, to my ear, didn't make sense. And I agreed with those rules, and that opened the door for me. And I had a professor, Dr. Dan Warner. He sat me in his office. I just kept, due to 12-step recovery, I wasn't afraid to say, I don't know, and I don't get it. And so I sat in his office every day, and we listened, and he explained things, and we listened. And I was just hoping maybe I could do well in school without liking classical. That was with my mindset back then. And then one day he played a Beethoven violin concerto, and I went, oh my God. And something clicked for me. Not say I get classical music, but who does really? But it had gave me that feeling when I first listened to Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and all that excitement. And oh my God, next, what's next? What's next? What's next? And God bless him for putting in the time. He put in a lot of work with me.
Would you say you see a lot of similarities between the two different genres?
Well, absolutely. All the death metal bands and all their satanic stuff, you can thank the church for all that stuff. For, you know, all the church music from Gregorian chant to all the Palestrina stuff, and I won't nerd out on you right now, but yeah, the church gave us rock music. Blues was its own thing, but yeah, the church gave us rock music.
Are you still a rocker?
You know, I listen to it, and I don't keep up on all the new stuff because I don't want to. I'd like to listen to, you know, what's new, and then a lot of it's not my cup of tea. I don't want to be the old fart and just, in my day, this was, like, that doesn't do anything. I like a lot of music, and I have a wide variety of tastes. So, rocker at heart, I like to put on Black Sabbath's first four records and sit there and get lost in it like I did when I was a kid and scare the hell out of myself. That stuff is always magic to me.
That's a fascinating journey. And to how you got here, that's just awesome. I know you said you gave us the Cliff Notes version of it. Now, I did mean to watch your documentary. Well, not your documentary, but that you are featured in the Skid Row Marathon, internationally acclaimed and multi-award winning. It's free on YouTube, correct?
Yes.
And so I wanted to watch it, but I wanted to ask you, as I have not gotten a chance to watch it yet. Now, at what point in your recovery or throughout your process of this journey, when did that take place?
Well, I've always been a runner because I've been fighting my weight my whole life. So back in the rock days, it was a different time, and no one wants to see a 6'5" fat guy out on stage. So you had to be lean, mean fighting machine, and I could run. And running would also clear the chatter in my head and get away from everybody. If you're in a van or a bus, you got to get away. So I'd run. And I got into the Midnight Mission weighing over 300 pounds due to alcoholism, dying. And a Superior Court judge, Craig James Mitchell, came down to start a running club. And I was newly sober and just in terrible physical shape. But I remember what running did. And I hated him when I first met him because my old mindset of being the police and a judge. And I asked him if he could get us out of the building on a pass to go running. And that was me jumping back into it. So it took a lot of work to get back running again, and he got me full blast running, weight shed, And he promises, if we continue to run, he promises a trip to Ghana. We're going to run the Accra Ghana Marathon. I thought he was a liar, and it wasn't. So our first trip with the Skid Row Running Club was four of us, a camera crew who made the film, Mark and Gabby Hayes, which I still talk to those guys. I love them. And we ran that marathon, and then we went to Rome, Jerusalem, Berlin. They just came back from Paris, and they're all over the world, and it's something magical. Not just me being able to do that, but if you have some guys who have never been out of the Los Angeles Skid Row area, and there is no hope, and they get sober, and it's like, why? What does this all mean? And then they're standing at the holy sites in Jerusalem, you know, or in Vietnam. We spent a month in Vietnam. It's like, what? I mean, the magic and, you know, getting sober and actually believing there's a new way and doing the work. And that's the real good stuff right there.
What was the moment for you when you said, you know, I've got to change my life or something's got to give? You know, what was that moment for you to get sober?
As crazy as it sounds, I just couldn't die. There's enough pills and enough heroin and all the other stuff that I kept waking up. It's psych ward, get out, drink. Arrested, psych ward, and it just wouldn't end. It just went on forever and ever, and it hurts really bad, and it just would not end. And then I had some friends kick in the door of what they called my place at the time, a monster movie. It's just a monster movie, and they stuffed all. I was unclean and unkempt and filthiness everywhere, and they stuffed my filthy clothes into a garbage bag, took me to Skid Row, and here's a mission there. There's some missions. It's go in there and stay, because we're not going to go in there and just find you, you know, find you rotting in your house or dead in your house. And I did. And I walked in, and I had a moment of clarity a few days after I was in the midnight mission. When I get out of treatment, there's always a scam of how can I manipulate my way in my back in my social circles. But I didn't have anything then anymore. Everyone cut themselves loose of me. Same with my parents, everyone. So I had this thing of it's over, and you know, the clarity of that going away immediately, but it's over and there is no other, there is nothing. So 12 steps, dive in. And they told me, I don't care if you like it or not. I don't care if you believe in God or not. I don't care about any of your feelings. Just take the steps and watch your life change. And lo and behold, once again, I didn't get everything. I didn't know everything, right? So it's my life got infinitely better while living in a homeless shelter in Skid Row. The best life ever, being in a homeless shelter, walking to school, to Los Angeles City College to go to school. Couldn't believe how great my life was. And I had my big shorts on, dressing like a 14-year-old, and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And I just, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
What is your advice to somebody who may be struggling with addiction, or maybe somebody who knows somebody who may be struggling with addiction, somebody who's, you know, they got clean and they want to move forward? How do they keep moving forward? What's your advice?
I work for a mental health agency. Can I say the name?
Yeah.
Behavioral Healthcare Partners, Inc. And that's a long story how I got that job. I believe it was a God thing when I was writing music. I saw it on the computer. But I wouldn't talk to those folks struggling with drugs and alcohol, homelessness. I can't talk to you like that the way I would talk to them, because I would share something. I mean, I can tell you all the personal stuff that I went through and you'd be mortified, but I can switch into street jive, as I call it, and talk with them, and they would know that I've been there. And it's like, you couldn't have possibly imagined the shame. I'm talking as them right now. The shame, the things that I've done, the things that were done to me, this existence, this horrendous, we don't want to be doing this. It just is, and the chaos just is. And I can go switch into that and tell them, you know, here's my story in a nutshell, because it's a long story. And you got to talk to it. No one's going to trust you right off the bat. You got to keep showing up. And we watch from a distance, even when I was out there drinking and using, we watch what the liars are. And I can't listen to a guy in a suit tell me, well, my life changed. Well, you have a suit on. You have no idea what I went through or what I've done. And then my story doesn't change. And, you know, like Judge Mitchell from the Running Club said, you cast a wide net and hopefully we grab a few. And they have to be willing. And in that moment, it's, I need treatment. You've got to get them out of there immediately. A lot of times that's hard, you know. It's like, great, I got you a car and we're going to Akron or we're going to Cincinnati, we're out of here. Your life's going to change and that's hard. A lot of people want to stay here. I was talked to in a very direct manner, which might offend some folks, but that's how I got it and that's how I present myself. Not belittling anyone, but very direct. And I pull no punches. And if you don't like that, I'm sorry. It's the way it was given to me. But I will go to the ends of the earth with you if you decide to make this leap. You know, it's just continuously showing up. And hopefully someone will say, I need to go. And I've seen that happen. But I've seen a lot of people struggle as well. In my job, they give me the, not the leash, but the go out there and get it. And so there's not a lot of corporate, oh my God, here's a lot of paperwork that you have to do, and it's the nonprofit world. That's not a popular opinion as well, but that's my opinion, and if no one likes it, I don't care. It's just, it's a lot.
I think going back to what you said earlier, you know, I can't die, and just knowing that there is a way out and there is hope. What would you say to yourself before, you know, now that you are where you are now, what advice would you say to yourself?
Precursor to that, it's not the drugs and alcohol. That's our solution that takes the chatter away. It's the feeling of the selfish feeling inside. You're less than, you're not a good person, you're a piece of crap. It's just nonstop. And when I drink my first drink, it all goes away and I'm a friend to all people. I know what you're feeling and it's okay. You don't have to hate yourself that much. Everyone is struggling and everyone has that mask up. And it's, yeah, how are you doing? Fine. Probably not. But it's okay. You don't look out of spots. It's okay. We're all trying to figure that out. And when you know somebody who's not lying, when they look you in the eyes and you give you that thing, and it's like, wow, he's telling me the truth. Being the way we are, drug addict alcoholics, we know we're the king of the BSers, right? So I walk up to you and I got my meter on. It's like, ah, you're a liar. And we have that down. So when someone tells the truth, it's hard to keep eye contact. It's hard. You're listening. It's like, this guy knows what he's talking about. I know some women out here doing the work as well. And they're hardcore and they're doing it. And you know right away they're not lying.
And I think it's great that after all of that, you were still able to go back to doing what you love to do. And that's music.
It was amazing because I took classes at Los Angeles City College. My big goal was getting an SRO in Skid Row, single room occupancy, a little studio the size of it's really small. Living in Skid Row, maybe I can get an acoustic guitar and plunk out some chords. And I had my eye at a job at Wendy's, and that was my life goal. Maybe I can quit drinking and get a job at Wendy's. And that was the mountaintop for me. And then I went back to school, and recovery taught me, sit in front, introduce yourself, set up the chairs if the chairs aren't set up. First one in, last one out. And you're going to be tired, but it doesn't matter. And you keep showing up, and things started. And I realized, I'm not dumb. I'm not that D student who snuck out of high school and smoking pot. I'm just an idiot, and I would never get it. I'm not saying I'm brilliant, but I became an honor student. You know, it just, I'm not dumb. And when that comes, how did that happen? Well, recovery in the 12 steps. Oh my God, it does work. And now you just want to grab everyone and try to help them, and they think you're crazy, you're psycho, and I got to have to tone it down a bit, you know.
I appreciate you coming in to tell a little bit more about your story. You got to watch Skid Row Marathon, and as well as the season finale at the Midland Theater. Is there anything else you want to add about your upcoming event this Saturday?
You'll see us, the board members, at the front when you come walking in. Say hello. I'd love to talk with you. If you get the chance, Skid Row Marathon is a good watch. I swear you're not going to sit down and go, oh, what have I done? And, you know, those movies, 5 minutes into it, you know it's a bummer. And please watch that. And please come up to us. You can't miss me. I'm 6'5 with tattoos on my head. So please introduce yourself. If anyone is struggling, I'm at the Midland Theater. Or I can be reached at BHP or my socials. You know, I will. I'll do my best to help you find a solution and or answer any questions.
You've got the vibe. Listen for New Vibe, available wherever you download podcasts.